This kid puts on quite a show.
I have eyes on the target. He does not look all that threatening.
Looks can be deceiving, Your Highness.
Junk, junk, junk. I swear some graphics are happening now. Junk.
Welcome to Court Killers Reckoning. The world of entertainment has turned upside down, and we are just trying to find out what to watch, what we want, where we want, whenever we want. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian, where's the good stuff?
Oh, my goodness. I hope it's in What If Season 2, coming soon to Disney+. I rather enjoyed What If Season 1, but I'd be more curious to know what our special guest, Mr. Michael Television, would think of such of it.
Michael P. Television, what do you think?
How you doing, Mike?
Good, good. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Did you watch the original What If Season 1?
I did. I actually watched intermittent episodes. I didn't binge it the way I normally do other Marvel stuff.
The bummer is that I can't really air my beef without spoilering. What's our policy on season one beef bubbling?
That's fine. Yeah. Go ahead. Spoil away. I'll still watch it and enjoy. So.
You and I are Marvel fans of old, and as you know, the Watchers' one job is to watch.
Yeah.
And to literally do nothing else. Season one, they did a lot of every single episode, him saying, I have only one job, and that is only to watch, and never ever participate in any way, under any circumstances, shall I ever do anything than watch. Can you guess what happens?
He does something. He actually gets involved and does something. Yeah.
Who could have seen that coming? So that's my worry about What If Season 2. But I will say that What If Season 1 was a real, real treat, at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was. I'm really excited to see that they're actually doing it in the same fashion as the actual comics themselves. You know, like that. That's because I love those comics. They were a bunch of my favorite, and I still actually have a bunch of those issues. But yeah, man. I don't know why. I just you know what? Really, truthfully, my wife is making it difficult for me to watch Marvel stuff because she's not a Marvel fan, and so
yeah,
you know.
What if she was?
I know.
Yeah, I like the What If series. I'll be curious, Brian, if in season two the Watcher says, I only watch. There was just that one time where I didn't watch, but this
I swear,
I'm one definitely strike. Only watching.
We worked it out, me and the missus. It's fine. We all understand we slip sometimes. what say we go on a supply run?
A wonderful idea. Capital.
Supply run. We're running in the dark. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Warner Music Entertainment and a production company called Seriously Happy have agreed with the estate of French singer and celebrity Edith Piaf to use AI to make an animated version of Piaf for a biopic. It will create her voice as well as her image, and she will narrate the story of her life from the 1920s to the 1960s. Edith Piaf is sort of a national treasure in France, if you haven't heard of her. It will use actual recordings and TV footage of Edith Piaf, so it won't all be generated, but then they will add generated content to illustrate things that weren't captured on video and be able to tell a fuller version of her story. Brian, Mike, how do we feel about this? Everybody's playing by the rules. The estate has agreed. Granted, she's been dead since the 1960s, but everybody who has a legal stake now is on board with this.
I think I could say what we're all thinking. It really depends on whether or not you really know Edith Piaf. Let's go to Mike. Mike?
Yeah, I this is the first time I've actually encountered her name ever. but then again, I'm not too well versed on French national treasures. You know, that is pretty scary. To think that. That they're gonna take this person and sort of recreate them. I mean, yeah, that's
Hold on. First, Tom, who's Edith Piaf?
She is the like national singer of France. Have you ever heard La Vie en Rose, like in that cabaret style? Yeah, I bet you have.
I'm almost certain I have. I just don't know it by the name. Think of
classic French cabaret song. It's probably Edith Piaf.
Okay, that
you've heard. Yeah, okay. She is. And so, you know, our dumb American side aside of like, we don't know who she is. She's huge in France. She actually has a huge following around the world, in a lesser sense. And so the key here is not who is Edith Piaf, but is it cool
that we've taken a celebrity and
we're going to synthesize her?
Are the French cool with this? Because it seems like they're pretty precious about all things French. And it seems to me that like they'd be like, that you'd have people up in arms and rioting and things of that nature, right? Isn't that sort of their MO?
I mean, I'm curious. Yeah, I'm curious what the French reaction is to. But again, everybody's playing by the rules. Everybody agreed to it. Like everybody who can, who's alive.
I guess so. If they're generating the content, can they actually ask her? Can't they just do a little AI generated version of her and be like, "Hey, would you be comfortable with this?" And then you know,
oh, that's amazing to get an AI like, oh, to sign contracts on behalf of the deceased version of the original.
Yeah. Listen, this is the first one. Like, granted, we've had simulations of celebrities before and part way, but this is the first time that we're like seeing the current generation of models on board to generate a full version of someone in a biopic. This is either going to be a disaster and everyone will point to it as the worst version of this, or it'll be the trivia question of like, what was the first synthesized celebrity?
Yeah. Well, and we have talked about the fact that I believe James Earl Jones signed away his afterlife rights to the use of his voice for Darth Vader, what have you. But I'd be curious, Mike, as an entertainer and a creator, last week we teased the idea of the emerging story of the Omnistar, and the thesis being just as people were stars and they were afraid of radio and television and movies, but those ended up taking stars and making them megastars. Now we're entering the age of the Omnistar. Long after you're dead, some version of you will still be singing and creating.
Or even
and
while
talking.
You're still alive, you can do more things with your approval than you could physically if you had to do them all yourself.
So I guess the question to you, Mike, is you're somebody who embraces opportunities fairly liberally. I mean, we've seen you on so many different platforms. You've created music scenes all over the place. Do you inherently have megrims about this, or does this seem like a natural evolution to you?
You know, it's funny. To me, it seems like it depends on how it's applied, right? The thing is that like, certainly I could see a lot of advantage to being like, hey, this is my brand. This is what I do. Let me plug in all of these attributes and then see what gets what pops out. Because sometimes, it's really funny. I actually just had a pretty interesting conversation with ChatGPT where I was trying to get it to like kind of take it like where I was like, hey, isn't it kind of a weird that you can just do this as quickly as you can, you know, right off the bat? Like I was trying to get it to like, I admit that it's an AI and that it's a little bit strange that we're having a conversation like this. So anyway, I mean,
the problem with that is like it's a golden retriever with silicon, like it just wants to please you.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to say, isn't it weird that you could do 12 backflips, and it'll say, sure is, but I'm pretty great.
Yeah. But I do think that like it'd be really curious to see, you know, if I could just put in certain parameters and be like, let this thing generate an album of my music that sounds like my music. You know, it becomes, you know, maybe if I retain ownership of it, maybe I can curate a new collection of hits that are, you know, AI spawned. I don't know. You know, like
as long as you retain ownership of it, right?
That's exactly the key
to all of this. It's all going to rely on the legal protections for intellectual property, which, again, in this Edith Piaf case, they've got the estate's approval, and that's legally the rights to all of Edith Piaf's images and music and everything. So they're cool there. And what you're saying, Mike, is as long as you're in control of it, as long as, you know, somebody else can't just take and do a version of you without your permission legally. Granted, they could, but, you know, as long as you've got some protection from that, you're cool being able to do it for yourself, is what you're saying.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And I do think, you know, I mean, I think it is exciting to the idea of people being able to create stuff, like not having to go through the legwork of learning how to play an instrument, but still being able to write music, still being able to write a story, like being able to go in and like just like that's because it opens the doors to so many new potential stories and app and movies and film and music. And
so,
you know,
so I have a hypothetical for you. You're somebody who is incredibly prolific. If you were to make a rough estimate of how many songs you've written and recorded and released in the music industry, what would that number be, give or take?
It's over 500. I think on Spotify, I've got around 500 songs.
Okay. So let's say, as we all know, you're a vampire and you're going to live for 1,000 years, but let's say you're getting up to year like 990, so you're getting a little long in the tooth. Many humans have equity in their house, and so they sign away basically a reverse mortgage. Can you see a situation where before it even goes to the question of the estate, before you even pass away, you actually say, you know what, keep me comfortable and fed for the remainder of my, 700 more years. Could you see yourself signing away those rights?
That's actually a great question. And I don't know. I'd have to cross that bridge when I came to it. The thing is because I do think that like part of me is excited about the idea of walking away at some point, being like, this is, I've told my story. I am now done with the music side of my, like I do like the idea of having an ending to, and being able to just live on off of the fruits of my efforts. But the thing is that like, but I don't know. I romanticize that, but you know, but maybe I will want to keep putting out records to the end of my days. And at the same time, like if it becomes super easy for people to just steal my sound, you know, I'd end up trying to make weirder and crazier sounding music just to be like, okay, and like try to copy this, suckers, you know.
It would be almost certainly your name and likeness and attitude and style that would be important. Like, for example, Tom, what about you? You're only 900 years old and getting long in the tooth. Would you allow them to essentially take care of you, knowing that they could speak on your behalf?
I mean, sure. In the right, with the right setup and guarantees, you know, reverse mortgage. If I'm old enough and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to live to finish it, then yes. I think a more interesting question is not, you know, would you rent out your image? Because I think, yeah, I think most of us under the right conditions might, but are you cool with them making things of yours after you're gone? After you're dead, do you care if they continue making Mike TV music that you didn't make, that you couldn't make?
Yeah, and that's a really, and again, I don't think so, but I don't know. The thing, you know, I mean, I think
no kicking back the question. We want a gut check.
I want to be able to say, hey, here I was on this planet Earth. This is my story. This is the music I made. Because the way I'm putting out records is it's an autobiography but in song, you know. So I want to tell my story through music, and then when it's done, I want to be, that was my story, you know. And so the idea that people could come along and add more chapters that I didn't get a sign off on, that is a little weird to, you know? Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah.
So I personally, I'm like, fine. Yeah. And to tie into Brian's question, especially if you pay me up front, like, we won't do anything with your image or likeness until you're dead, but we'll keep paying you every month for the rights to do whatever we want afterwards. I'm like, great. Yeah, I won't be around. Brian, what about you?
And I think that I might be in a different position because
Because you're immortal.
The calculus, because 900 years ain't nothing to this guy. Oh, no, because the calculus changes when you think about legacy and the fact that my kids are going to have to live with whatever it was. So, for example, I'm rather proud of the entire run of Scam School on Revision 3 and Discovery Digital and all that stuff. But to my children, they might not understand the nuance of, like, with a couple of missteps, I think I did a pretty fantastic job of keeping to the ethical way of teaching magic within the community or whatever. But let's say the AI drifts and is just like, becomes increasingly, you slide the slider bar of sarcasm, and then, whoever David Blaine, 12.0 releases a thing, and now my character is pooping on him, and then my poor kids have to hear about it. That would scare me, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Just not being able to curate exactly how your legacy is received. Like, I can put, as so far, I can, everything I put out is 100% Mike TV approved, and so I can very comfortably be like, yeah, this is a representation of me and my perspective. It seems a little weird to like let that go, because a lot of the things I do are predicated on the idea that I want what I do to be remembered after I'm gone. This is my, have kids. It is my legacy.
I have a question that I think we're kind of sidestepping, which is, I'll label it the Phantom Menace question. And this is one that you can write us in at courtkillers@gmail.com. Like, yes, today you might feel pretty good about it, but will this technology be absolutely horrifically embarrassing in 1,000 years? Is it going to be the equivalent of a crappy wax cylinder down the way? And you're like, ooh.
I mean, that's a great question. Like, we might be wringing our hands. Like, oh, I don't know. Eyes of future technology, that they'd be like, yeah, we would never even bother with any of that AI created crap that people made. Like, it's quite possible.
Yeah.
Other question to go along with this. Is your hero as far as being a magician or an actor or a musician? And would you want them to be simulated?
I'll go first. It turns out my hero ended up being my mentor, and so I want him to never be simulated, so only I have all of his secrets. So that's me being totally greedy. But I can imagine
my question is, who do you love consuming their art?
So yeah,
maybe and someone whom you.
They always come in threes.
Would you want them to make more stuff?
Yeah. In fact, that's weird thinking about that. If there could be, because I'm a huge Terry Pratchett fan. So if it was possible for there to be more Terry Pratchett books that take place in the Discworld universe that feel very much like they were written by Terry Pratchett, I'd probably sign up. I get to still live with those characters and have additional stories forever and always. Yeah, I'd probably do that pretty easy.
Yeah. Would you want, after Stephen King is gone, for him to continue writing, Brian? Especially if the AI could be trained to write only gunslinger novels in the style of King at his prime.
Well, and let's go ahead and be the most generous and say it even knows how to end a story. That's still a challenge, because in my experience I spent like 2 months riddling with Blaine the Mono, if you've read the Dark Tower series, and that was a lot of fun. But then I got bored of it. And in my experience, eventually nobody's thrilled unless they're talking to a real human or reading the thoughts of a real human on the other side. And I that seems to be universal. As novel as it is right now, I feel like that fades away over time.
What if AI generated content ends up to being nothing like what we're talking about, but instead is just a new genre? Like animation. we don't look at animation and go, well, that doesn't look like reality, right? We have carved out like, oh, it's animation. I have a different set of judgments for it. What if AI generated content, you know, 100 years down the road is like, oh yeah, that's just a genre. It's AI generated. It's cool for what it is.
We kind of have a preview of what that looks like in that everybody who loves a certain anime show tends to get really upset when anybody tries to make it in real life. And they begin to, they're like, stop even trying to do that. But let's say a computer could do it perfectly. I feel like they'd still say, stop even trying to do that. Yeah. It was already perfect.
I mean, but what if all of the AI generated stuff was like, okay, we're going to have Humphrey Bogart star in a movie with Mark Hamill. And it's an AI generated thing. And people like, I don't expect that to look real, but it's fun because it's almost like the what if scenarios, right?
Yeah. It's you can do an Ocean's 11 with your favorite stars throughout time. You know,
yeah, Clooney and Sinatra can be together.
Yeah. And it's funny because I also wonder if it won't allow for stuff like the Diamond Age, like, you know, where you have bespoke entertainment that's specifically dialed into your taste and it's just for you.
That's probably more what it's for. Yeah.
I think that would be super cool because then you could, it could evolve as you evolve. So, you know, so as you get, as your tastes get more particular, as you find that I really like this rabbit hole, I want to go down this rabbit hole, you know, it can just modify and adjust and give you the story that you want. That would be pretty exciting.
Cordkillers@gmail.com is the place to write us. I personally am of the opinion, I'm just going to mush mouth, that it will be novel at first, but eventually people will get bored of it.
And that's why you need to support humans directly with cash payments at patreon.com/cordkillers.
Boy, oh boy, Tom, and there's never been a better time because I have the feeling we're about to spend a lot of cash on upgrading this studio. So head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Keep us loud, live, and independent. What, normally we ask for $1 an episode. You know what, this week it's going to be $1 an episode, but we want it to be the first time. It's a pledge drive. I'm calling it. We want more bucks per episode. Only one at a time, though, per account. How about that?
Yeah, increase by $1 or add $1 if you're new. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's go off on a search party.
Yeah, here we go. Search party. What? Search party.
Warner Brothers moved Dune Part 2 again, this time earlier. The movie was once set to debut during the holidays. Then got pushed to March 15th, and it's now been pushed back 2 weeks. So you're going to get it on March 1st, St. David's Day.
So I don't want to read too much into this because obviously we've had a lot. Man, it's been years of COVID changes of deadlines and stuff. This one feels like a more traditional, just tactical move, like they're up against some other movie.
So to keep it in perspective for everybody, when the writer's strike ended, the actor's strike had to end. When the actor's strike ended, our promise to you was, we will keep you up to date as they figure out the new schedule, because that threw everything off. And to me, this is a sign that they're fine-tuning, that they've got the schedule almost down now, and they realized, oh, you know what? We could do Dune a couple of weeks early. Or they saw something else is coming on March 15th from somebody else, and they wanted to move it out of the way, whatever. But this kind of move, a small move like this, makes me feel like, okay, we're approaching the end of the schedule realignment.
Are you a Dune fan,
Mike? I am. I'm a Frank Herbert fan, very much, and I did like the new movie, very much. Yeah. So we'll be curious. I'll be curious to see how they pay it off in this next movie.
We also got a lot of people talking about Ridley Scott's Napoleon, speaking of biopic. It does not simulate Napoleon, though. It's got an actor playing him. Ridley Scott basically told interviewers that he doesn't care if it's historically accurate. Some people are criticizing, as they always do with these kind of biopics, that sort of thing. To the critics who say the film isn't historically accurate, he told the BBC, "Were you there? oh, you weren't there? Then how do you know?
Well, and also, I believe Ridley Scott is approaching that wonderful age of no F words given. As a matter of fact,
he's never really given a whole lot of Fs, but he has out of Fs. He has, yeah, absolutely no.
Well, I remember one of the examples that really stuck out was in the movie Gladiator. During the actual time it's set, they would do stuff like stop the fight and have people hold up a sign that said, when you're using olive oil, make sure to use so-and-so brand olive oil. And he wanted to put that in, but they're like, no, nobody's going to believe that. But he's like, but that's what actually happened. So he intentionally had to excise that. So I would say, fine, history is whatever we want to make up, apparently.
Yeah, and I think he's trying to be, you know, generally close to the story. It's just certain lines between Josephine and Napoleon that he invented have rubbed some historians the wrong way, who are like, well, based on what we do know, that seems unlikely. And he's like, I don't know. It seems like I can make up that part, whatever I want, as long as I get the big stuff right. And he does get the, you know, Waterloo happens and all of that sort of thing. He was also asked how he feels about never having won an Oscar despite all these incredibly successful movies he's made. And he said, I don't really care.
He's like, you know what I won? Franklin's. Benjamin Franklin's.
Benjamin Franklin's. Pounds sterling. Lots of them. You going to go see Napoleon, Mike?
I don't know. I'll catch it at some point in time, but I haven't actually been out to a movie theater in some time.
You didn't go see the Oppenheimer with the Barbie?
We did finally catch Barbie. Isabella really wanted to see Barbie, but, I did not catch Oppenheimer. Hmm.
Well, Christopher Nolan says you can buy it on Blu-ray now, and told an audience, we put a lot of care and attention into the Blu-ray version of Oppenheimer and trying to translate the photography and the sound, putting that into the digital realm with a version you can buy and own at home and put on a shelf so no evil streaming service can come steal it from you.
So
those were his actual words. You might think, oh, Tom's making up that last part. No, that's actually what he said.
You know what, forgive me. I just want to hear Tom's opinion on this. Sure. Tom, do you believe anything about that being an immortal, like at least vinyl is a physical thing that, yes, it may degrade over time, but it ain't DRM'd or anything like that. Like at least you have that wax tube or what have you. Like, do we even believe that with Blu-ray?
I mean, sure. It's not that hard to get around the encryption on a Blu-ray. So if you own the disc and you have it, then no one can take that away from you. Would I look at this and I think, like, who hurt Christopher Nolan? Because frankly, most of the stuff you buy online hasn't gone away, and companies bend over backwards to help you. Freaking Google just finally shut down its digital magazine service that it had stopped selling magazines from in 2020 and is giving refunds to people after it already stripped away the DRM to allow you to download them. It's giving refunds to people if there are interactive features in the digital magazines that no one bought. Now, if they're going to go that far to avoid public backlash for digital magazines, I think digital movies aren't as bad of a bet as Christopher Nolan says. That said, those of you out there right now going, yes, Tom, but if I want to be absolutely sure I can have that Blu-ray under my control, you're right. You're absolutely right. I just think it's a, you know, 99% versus 100% sort of situation. But if you want to be 100%, having that Blu-ray, the only things that can go wrong is the world no longer has Blu-ray players and your last one breaks and you can't buy another Blu-ray player, which also seems fairly unlikely.
As a Betamax owner, Mike, are you a physical media person or no?
I was, but after a number of moves, I no longer am. Everything's digital now. But
Brian, what do you think? What do you think of Nolan railing against the evil streaming services?
I used to be what Harari, the author of Sapiens and Homo Deus, called a dataist, which is somebody who believes that everything can be captured. until I saw a Fermi problem that sort of breaks down. The only way that could be possible is at the highest density and highest encryption is within, I think it was 150 or 200 years, the entire mass of the Earth has to be converted into hard drives. And then I was like, oh no, chaos reigns. Things go away. The end.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you can make the argument that just not owning things is better because then you don't have to manage them. You don't have to maintain them. They don't take up space. You're not using materials. So I don't know. There's arguments on all kinds of sides of this. Critics have almost universally turned against The Crown. The latest half season has been released on Netflix. And a lot of people, I think Variety gave it a decent review, but everybody else is panning it from what I've seen. Particularly, they are upset by the fact that Princess Diana's ghost visits Queen Elizabeth after she dies.
See, that's weird, because the last time there were so many critics of The Crown, it was over taxation without representation.
Yeah. I don't know. I like a good ghost story. I haven't seen this yet to see if this is as cheesy as people say. Mike, do you watch The Crown?
Yeah.
Are you now?
I don't. Yeah. No. That's we have yet to.
Are you now, or have you ever been watching The Crown?
A couple of notes here. Netflix's stop motion Pokemon show arrives on December 28th. And Warner has renewed Harley Quinn for a fifth season on Max.
Two very short notes on my end. I tried very hard to goad one of my daughters into speaking ill of the stop-motion Pokemon. And I was like, heh, doesn't it look like Wes Anderson did a Pokemon? And Penny was like, yeah, that seems like that'd be cool. And I was like, whoops.
Nailed it, Pokemon. Well
yep.
done.
Good job.
Do either of you know the Saturday Night Live trio, Please Don't Destroy? They do digital shorts for Saturday Night Live these days.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no? not on my end either.
Okay. Well, their first full-length feature movie premiered on Peacock this weekend called The Treasure of Foggy Mountain. It looked kind of mediocre to me. Its reviews were fairly mediocre. But I find these guys hilarious on Saturday Night Live. So I found it interesting that NBC was taking, you know, basically the heirs to the Lonely Island guys, right? Mm-hmm. And creating a movie direct to Peacock with them.
Well, and I try to never be harsh on freshman efforts when anybody graduates from either web to television or television to movies or whatever, because I remember the journey of a couple of guys who did South Park. Blazeball was not the greatest movie of all time, but danged if the Mormon musical isn't very popular.
Yeah, no, and yeah, it did take them a little while to kind of get their feet under them, but the Team America movie, man, I still die laughing when I watch that. So
yeah.
All right, here's another one you'll die laughing watching. Parts 1 and 2 of Rebel Moon from Zack Snyder. These are coming to Netflix. They're both PG-13 rated, but there are R-rated director's cuts that will also be released on Netflix. They will each be 1 hour longer than the non-director's cuts and more violent. The PG-13 version, part one, comes out December 22nd. We don't know when the longer version will come.
So, Mike, where are you at with Star Wars? Or with non-Star Wars universe?
Oops, sorry. Freudian slip.
With non-Star Wars stuff?
Yeah.
This is Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon is supposedly based on a script that he pitched to Lucasfilm and it was declined, so he just changed all the names to not be Star Wars and made it anyway.
Ah, I see.
The bummer with doing this and I understand the desire to, like, you know, please all people, but what you confusion is the enemy, as I've often said here. And what you don't want is to say, oh, I saw blank. And then there's an awkward pause at a party and someone says, which version? And then, you know, so you can have a different debate based on that. I mean, I'll end up watching it because I want to know if it's anything. Like in an alternate universe, Andor could have been one of these, and Andor is the greatest Star Wars thing ever, but had it been thrown away and Tony Gilroy was kicked out of Hollywood, I'd be sad.
I just feel like this isn't going to be as popular as either Zack Snyder and Netflix are expecting, and I kind of hope I'm wrong. I hope it's great, because I want to watch it and be blown away and be swept up in it. And so far, I'm not getting the feeling that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's for Zack Snyder. For me, is kind of he's real hit and miss in terms of the stuff that I appreciate his. So yeah, I'll definitely check it out. But yeah,
yeah. As Weird Ami is saying in the chat room, that's not a space station; it's a moon, a rebel moon. All right, let's see if we can find some buried treasure for the folks.
Oh yeah, we can. Here is a picture of some buried treasure with some weird.
I'll talk in an English accent and I say buried treasure. This is where we talk about some gems that we have watched and found. Mike, I don't know. Do you have a piece of buried treasure to share with the folks? Anything you've been watching lately you want to share?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, it's funny. We just turned a corner in this show. It's called Our Flag Means Death. Do you know?
Oh my gosh! How far in are you?
So we were watching. I was watching it, and it was never laugh out loud funny, but it was. I dug the story. I dug the characters. I dug the setup, but the Blackbeard has just made his big deal with them.
You're only in season one.
Yeah. And it's now really turned a corner for me. I'm now excited to see what else is afoot. So yeah. So that's been really, really great. Because we just discovered Isabella, she's a Tumblr Rooney. And so she does a lot of Tumblr stuff, and she's got a lot of mutuals that make suggestions. And so we've been kind of going through a handful of her suggestions.
Buckle up, my friend. You're going to have a good ride.
Awesome. That's great. That's exciting.
Brian, what about yourself?
Oh, the usual suspects. I am really frustrated. I really wish I could watch Rick and Morty as it comes out late on a Sunday night, because I've already bought the whole season. And so instead, what I have to do is wait until first thing in the morning, Monday morning.
Oh, right. You're not using a direct TV now or a Hulu Live or YouTube TV. You're just buying it. So you have to wait till the next day. That sucks.
And I don't have much stomach for advertisements on there for taking me out of it. But I tell you what, my new Monday morning ritual of waking up and watching Rick and Morty, not bad. It's pretty great.
Rick and Morning.
It's Rick and Morning. I weep for his death every morning. I guess we should talk a bit about this week's plot, or do you want to save that for after talk?
We can talk about it more in after talk, but you know, being not too spoilery, it was their version of a clip show.
Well, it was specifically every season they've done one playful kind of like just writer's room, everyone throw stuff out thing. And this one is kind of framed like a faux clip show, but it's sort of like interdimensional cable or what if blank. What, you know, I'm a big fan of one note jokes, and this one was the best one in a couple of years, I thought.
It was a nice palate cleanser for the season, to be honest. I liked that because it had a running argument between Morty and Rick throughout that kept it feeling like it was a story, even though it was, like you say, really just a series of one-off jokes, and occasionally acknowledging that it's just a series of one-off jokes. So yeah, I thought it was good.
Yep, same here.
Throw out Zombieverse on Netflix. We talked about this on Court Killers a while back. Zombieverse is a reality show where they took a group of celebrities. In the first episode, the celebrities think that they are a panel that is watching a dating show, which is a typical setup where you've got the dating show and then you've got a panel of comedians or somebody who's commenting on what's happening. But one of the dating show participants has been infected, turns into a zombie, and then all heck breaks loose, and they're running out into the streets of Seoul, trying to get away from the zombies. Obviously, they know this is fake, and that it's a premise that they're supposed to lean into. And occasionally, you'll catch a couple of them laughing as they're doing stuff. But it's a pretty fun way of doing a zombie show, because they're filming it like it was a reality show. And they are giving them missions that they have to, you know, figure out how to get gas in the car and then how to get out of the gas station safely. And what, you know, how to escape a supermarket that they got themselves holed up into. It can get draggy. When they got in the supermarket, it got kind of draggy, but then once it gets going, it's pretty good.
Cool. Did you ever see the Darren Brown magic, I'm using air quotes, special where they hypnotized somebody? So basically they picked one person. They had a large data set of people to pick from, and they picked somebody who they felt like they could, air quotes, get. And they found out all of his favorite shows. You know, let's say he likes, for example, some BBC News, whatever. And then they put him in a situation where this dude, I guess the American equivalent would be like, I recognize that anchor and I'm definitely watching Fox News and I can switch between all these channels. And they're definitely saying, they're not using the word zombie, but they're acting as though something is causing dead people to rise up and run around. And then it accelerates from there. And it's this constant calculus of like, which is more likely? That they're spending this much time, energy, and effort to convince me that there's an apocalypse, or maybe there's actually an apocalypse happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. That's Zombieverse, available on Netflix. And where was that? Can you find that special?
I'm sure it's on BritBox. I think it was a BBC original. Or probably Channel 4, now that I think about it.
Meanwhile, a Friday is approaching that is described as dollar signs for you, right, Brian?
Oh, man, it used to even be on Friday, and now it's not. It's like, it's so, I liked it when there was a ritual where everybody got into a line, and they knocked out the door, and they bought stuff from scamstuff.com, gear for the modern rogue, and we would always have new things available. This year, our big puzzle box is Vox Tempest, but I have a little bit of an extra treat. I have been told, normally this is very strictly confidential, Wednesday is the day, Tom.
Black Wednesday.
World's greatest con, what? Season 4. In which,
no.
It's a short one. It's going to be two halves and a Q&A, but ooh, is it an interesting story? I don't know that I'm allowed to say what it's about, but get ready. If you're excited, take that excitement and buy some gifts for your friends over at scamstuff.com, gear for the modern rogue. And if you feel like buying a computer, buy one from doghousesystems.com/rogue, R-O-G-U-E.
Meanwhile, Brian and I and Mike will be scanning the horizon.
Beep, 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 boop, boop, beep, bop, boop, boop. I have found a horizon.
The music for this show is really on point.
I mean, we're just...
Thanks, Mike.
We're crushing it today.
Yeah, totally.
Variety reports that Marvel is considering Pedro Pascal to play Reed Richards in a Fantastic Four movie. We do know that Matt Shackman, who did WandaVision, is on the hook to direct it. Are you disappointed, Brian, that it would be Pedro Pascal and not John Krasinski?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. What do we got? We got Pedro Pascal, who played the greatest character in all of video game history, Joel, and did the right thing for Ellie. And we have John Krasinski, who showed up for about 4 seconds and dissolved into spaghetti in a movie once. I'm pretty okay with the Pedro Pascal.
Is he referring to The Quiet Place?
No, I'm referring to his role as Reed Richards.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's a crazy thing. Like, so far, every single Fantastic Four thing they've done for film has been a nightmare. Like, why are they? It's so strange to me that they're even going to attempt it. You know, like, why don't they introduce these characters in the MCU in a different like let us live with them for a while, because it just feels like it's just going to be a train wreck. You know,
we'll talk about it more in After Talk, but I think the secret is make Fantastic Four, a period piece set in Cold War 1960s, and then have them, I don't know, time travel and then show up in current day or whatever. That's the secret. Meanwhile, the HBO show The White Lotus is hoping to restart production in February. Casting on season 3 has already begun. Mike, you watched that White Lotus?
Yeah. I'm up on it. I like it. It's always, I think the first season was for me my favorite of the two, so I'll be curious to see how they the new cast and the new, and where do we know where it's going to be situated?
I think they're in Thailand, is that right? That's how I remember it. But yeah, the big news is it's back in production here. Also, you may have forgotten or never known that they're making a comedy action movie of The Fall Guy, the TV show.
The 80s, or the show in the 80s, yes. Lee Majors?
Lee Majors, awesome.
The Fall Guy. But this movie will star Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, and it has been moved to May 2024 in the slot previously held by Deadpool 3. Deadpool 3, as we previously mentioned, has been moved to July 26th.
That's a wild one, because one of the conceits of The Fall Guy was always that they were doing practical effects. They would actually do really cool stunts. Like, I remember it's like, we have to go undercover as riding these motorcycles. Ooh, I have to impress the motorcycle gang. Let me just do a wheelie across the rail of a single bridge. And then they would actually do it. And I wonder, in an age of CGI and stuff, whether or not that's going to, whether they'll be playful with that or not.
Yeah, I mean, there's still practical effects to do, but I think it's a cool, it's an interesting question of, if you know, how CGI fits into The Fall Guy. But it's also a comedy, so I don't think it's going to take itself too seriously, right?
Yeah. ABC announced that Jimmy Kimmel will be hosting the Oscars again, making this his fourth time hosting. The ceremony is scheduled on March 10th. Kimmel hosted in 2017, 2018, and 2023.
Remember, the Oscars was going without a human host long before AI was cool. So it's interesting to see they're sticking with Kimmel now. And Netflix has canceled 5 shows, including Shadow and Bone, which is a popular series based on popular books by Leigh Bardugo. Netflix also canceled animated shows Agent Elvis and Captain Fall, as well as Kim Cattrall starring series Glamorous and a sci-fi comedy called Fartzar. But definitely Shadow and Bone has the loudest audience in protesting that Netflix will not be making any more of it.
So, Mike, one of the things that I am of the opinion of is that Netflix canceling things is a sign of maturity and health, because when it was in a hyper-expansive growth phase, it was like, it doesn't matter how specific or garbagey the stuff was, just keep churning out anything. But now I perceive this as a flight to quality, although other people might say it's a flight away from a third season, at which point a lot of actors might have gotten a raise. Do you have a hot take on this either way?
Yeah, in fact, that's actually a really, that's something I've been kind of following with interest, because, you know, obviously I have a bunch of friends in LA that work in film and TV, and yeah, it's crazy, you know, all of the streaming services, you know, seem to, to me, it does feel like they're being a little bit mercenarial about it, because you know, it is going to cost them more. You know, they've everybody's come up with these, they now all have new agreements, and I think that they're going to make people pay, you know, like that. I mean,
they're going to make people pay.
It's sad to say, but the thing is that, like, you know, I think that they're going to, you know, if the things don't have a quick monetization, you know, strategy in place, then yeah, it seems to me that they're going to start squashing things, but we'll see. I mean, it is always curious.
When is it okay for a streaming service to cancel a show? What are the criteria?
Well, yeah, so it's funny, because you would think that it would be I would think that they're looking at it from the perspective of, okay, they're like, but again, like something with like The Sopranos, which is sort of the very beginning, at least in my estimation, of like, this is bespoke TV, or this is like, we're going to do kind of like we're going to do high-end storytelling that is going to be, you know, that will become the hallmark of our network, our studio. And they did with The Wire. But the thing is, but now there's just so much content. There's so much stuff. It's like, it seems to me that they were spending like mad people. And now that they've got these new agreements, and now there's I think that just to me it feels like they're gonna squash shows with a little bit more expediency. And yeah, and so to answer your question, Tom, I don't really know. It seems to me that if you've got a very vocal audience. The thing, I mean, it seems like wouldn't somebody else pick it up? Wouldn't somebody, like, do they have those rights?
I mean, people are watching a show, no one's going to want to pick it up.
Yeah.
We're always convinced that the show we like, this includes me, should be saved, and we don't care about the shows we don't watch.
Yeah, that's you're right. I mean, yeah, it's curious. I mean, the thing I wonder. Do you know how much those shows cost to produce?
Yes, we have the entire budget right in front of us, but yeah, unfortunately, we don't have time.
That's all I know. they cost a lot, and I do know that supposedly Shadow and Bone did great in its first season and fell off quite a bit in its second season.
Mm. That's sad,
but that could also be false. I don't know that for sure, any more than I know the budget. All right, let's move on to some chatter.
You've got mail.
Mike wrote in and said, I'm sure Brian is aware of this, but in case he's not, Kevin Smith bought his childhood movie theater in New Jersey and is doing exactly what Brian asked for last episode. He hosts watch parties for all different kinds of movies, not just his own, and then does Q&A style talks about them. You cannot deny that Smith is a geek, especially when it comes to the comics, but also with general Hollywood lore. So hearing him talk about Marvel movies or classic Spielberg, etc., has to be fun. It's a bit of a hike from Texas, but it could be nice if you found the right group of movies to go watch.
I'll tell you what, I don't need to go all the way up to New Jersey. I'll just wait until Cargill rents out another theater. That's something that on his birthday he did with the local Alamo Drafthouse. It was like, if you know, you know. And then we all showed up at 1 a.m. and he stood up and he explained to us, look, you're going to watch this really cheap, bizarre horror movie. Here's why you're going to love it. And he was right. And I did. It was really cool.
Awesome.
We also got an email from Tim, who was weighing in on Brian's regular exhortation to cancel all of your services every so often and then only add them back if they are ones you need to watch. Tim uses temporary credit card numbers from privacy.com to do this. So he sets the credit card to expire in 3 months. And then when the service tries to charge that card, it says, oh, your card was declined. And then he can make a decision. Oh, do I want to give him a new temporary credit card number and keep going, or just say, no, forget it. Cancel it. I don't want it anymore.
Tom, privacy.com was a sponsor of Modern Rogue. And I love this idea so much. I did exactly that. And it worked all the way up until all the services started saying, that looks like it's not a credit card that we could keep on charging no matter what. But I love the idea, and I'm such a fan. I'm also a member.
We also got Perface for Radio with a reminder that it is MST3K marathon time.
Awesome.
This will be the longest Turkey Day marathon they've ever had at shoutfactorylive.com/MST3K-Turkey-Day-Marathon-2023. Marathon will feature episodes from season 1 to season 13. And hopefully we'll get some great news about crowdfunding season 14, because season 14 is being crowdfunded right now. Thank you, Perfect Face for Radio.
Yeah. Were you a fan?
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. Big time.
And then finally, Norm said, I couldn't endorse Tom's comments on the last episode of Loki more. I found it fantastic, and it might have been the best show I've seen this year. The way I keep getting tricked going down one path, then we went down another, and it ended in a place I sort of expected, but in a totally different way. Marvel gave me so many good feelings, I decided to ignore the bag reviews of the Marvels and go see it anyway, and then I wish I hadn't. It was a convoluted mess without a single positive memorable moment. How can the same company produce such a mesmerizing show like Loki around the same time as such a giant turd like the Marvels?
All I heard is that I should like Loki and I should most of all consume all of the content from one Michael Television. Mike TV, what are you up to these days?
Music, man. I'm actually winding down the second season of the podcast, Hesitation Cuts. I'm putting out a new record. They'll be coming out next month. It's a whole slew of never before released songs. So that's exciting. And then I'm trying to stay afloat, trying to keep myself, you know, sticking and moving.
Fantastic, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. And we are live at twitch.tv/nightattack Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I reckon we'll talk to you next time.